I don't know what to say, really. The biggest battle of our professional lives all comes down to today.
You've got to tell me on the gut. I don't want to determination. You've got it, you've got it.
It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
G'day everyone and welcome. Thanks for joining us. Another episode of Coach's Corner right here on mypodcasthouse.com. Our convener, Mark Sifuldis. G'day, Super.
Oh, Shebex, thank you once again for having us here. And we have an extremely good guest here in the studio. She
extremely
good. I don't know where that came from, but she is a world-renowned motivational speaker, impacted over 100,000 coaches, players, teams, and corporates over her 20-year period. She's a high-performance tennis coach, the coach of the Australian Junior Fed Cup team, specialist in NLP and positive mindset coaching. She's passionate about gender equality in sport, in life. She is bubbly, energetic, and does not need a coffee like I do right now. Emma Doyle, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. There's only one thing you got wrong there. Actually, I started coaching when I was 14 years of age. So this is my 28th year.
28th year.
In the industry now.
Wow.
So a couple of years on, you know, just a few little bit of experience. But I'm learning every day. I'm still growing. And, I reserve the right to constantly evolve. That's what I love about
exactly.
Books and podcasts, whatever I say today is what I believe today.
Nice.
Could change, you know.
It'll probably change when you walk out of here. But it's great to have you here. You're someone who I definitely grew up watching in the back streets of East Keele or down at the St. Peter's Tennis Club, where I waited for courts for hour upon hour, where you and your dad and your brother were out there hitting balls and wouldn't let me on the court. And I was this keen little kid and always looked up to the way that you went about the way you go about tennis and the way you went about everything in your life and still do to this moment in time. So it's great to actually have you in here to have a good chat. Emma, take us back to where it all started, where, you know, you were a young tennis player, obviously St. Peter's Tennis Club with your family, and you're a tennis player then, and you obviously got some great friends from that. Let's go back to those days of playing as a junior.
Let's go back, because as you said that, I'd love to share a story that I don't think I've told ever.
Okay.
So brand new story. I must love a story to get a good glimpse into someone's
life.
Do it. So I was playing in the St. Peter's Club Championships, my first ever tournament, and you know, playing Simon Priestley, one of my best mates today, which is a cool part of the story as well.
Yep.
And so we're seven. You know, it's first to eight. And it's 6-all, 7-all. And by the way, this is the final. I've seen the big trophy. I've already visualized it in my bedroom. And, you know, so yeah, so 6-all, 7-all, and I win 8-7. And I throw my hands up in the air and I'm like, yes. And I shake hands and she shake hands. I go in and I go to give the balls and the score. And he's like, no, you got to win by two. Like it's 9-7. It was tie break. You know, you should have been playing a tie break if it gets to that scoreline. So my dad's like, well, get back out there, you know, of course. And you know, I went back out there with tears in my eyes and I think I won 1 point in the tiebreak. And that summarizes my journey, which is it hasn't been easy.
Yep.
And I'm a little bit of when one door closes, you know, as in that story, my dad says, well, get back out there.
Yep.
And that's pretty much, as I'm sure, you know, you can appreciate as well, that that's what coaching is. You got to be passionate, because it's not always just that that path, like the highway just opens up for you and you just drive along it, and that's coaching.
It's an amazing story.
Mm.
It just hits a nail on the head with you, absolutely, because you're a go-getter.
Mm.
You just keep getting back out there and doing stuff, and I love following what you do on your social media account, because you're just impacting so many different people, and that's what we do and what's what we want to do. It's our goal as coaches. And
yeah,
is that your driving force in your coaching career, is it to impact people?
100%. My III, of course, is inspire, improve, and impact. And I talk about that with regards to my own life. It's this morning I've already watched a TEDx talk about pink and blue and the differences in gender this morning. It was an unbelievable video that I watched. You know, I'm always trying to get inspiration from others, and being inspired by yourself with what you've done with cross-transferring skills between tennis and AFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's the inspire, improve. Look, I'm a constant learner, and I try and give back. So every time I present, so I don't call myself a motivational speaker. I say motivation and activation, because every single time I present, it's like, you know, it's not look what I've done. It's actually here's a concept, say, around routines, and here's what I believe in, three gratitudes every morning. So here's a tip on how to go about doing that rather than checking your social media and you've already checked five emails and then you've already shitty and you're off to a crappy start in your day. Can I say that on your podcast?
Absolutely, you can. Okay. Say anything on here.
So that's the improve and then impact. You know, that's that dorky spreadsheet that I have that then I just look at every single – so I've got every single lesson I've ever done, every single presentation, and I just write down how many people attended. And I basically multiply that if I think I did a good job where people have, you know, written testimonials and said that really impacted me or, you know, that's really why I do what I do. And even last weekend I was in Tassie, you know, running a community coaching course, a beginning coaching course, and I got like five emails saying that was just, you know, so inspiring. And I've got the tools to go and coach. And, you know, running even a beginning course or whether it be taking the Junior Fed Cup team away, that's why I do what I do.
And you do it really well too, Emma. So it's a pleasure to actually hear these words. It's actually inspiring me. I want to get back out on the court this afternoon. So it's actually really good. So you talked about getting into coaching at 14.
Mm.
Why?
Mm. Well, it was actually as you grew up in that era where my coach said that if I wanted an extra private lesson a week, you know, why don't you coach one night a week? So it was to get my own game better. Nice. And so it was trading time for money. My parents definitely couldn't afford two private lessons a week.
Yep.
And I thought, hello.
Yep.
And the kick serve was big back then. It just came out. It was like this revolution, probably showing my age there. But, you know, there was only one coach in the area that knew how to almost teach it. And everyone was, you know, I was like, I need to learn how to do that thing there. So that's why I did it. But Bianca Quistapace was in my very first lesson that I ever gave.
Wow.
And, you know, she was this little pocket rocket and she went on to be, you know, 685 in the world or something.
Yep.
And, yeah, that was obviously not because of me at all. But the energy that those kids, like I walked off that lesson and I said, I want to be a coach for the rest of my life.
Hmm.
Yep. And that was profound. And of course, you know, since then I've had my, you know, my struggles with coaching, and got out of it at one point, totally got out of it for a year, at different times to reinvigorate yourself. And you've always got to do that as a coach.
But spot on.
But yeah, I mean, I just walked off the court and thought this is the job for me.
This is for you.
Yeah. And it was David Parkin that actually said, well, if you want to be the best coach you could be with his veins popping out of his neck, he said, well, have you played your, you know, have you maximized your playing potential? And I said, absolutely not. And he said, well, get out of here. What are you doing in my course? Go and play college tennis and then, awesome. And then come back and talk to me.
You know what I love about that is that I think more players of this generation should actually start coaching early and understand the game prior to trying to play the game. I feel like as a coach, I can only impart so much knowledge. But at the same time, it's important for us to let them experience stuff. Like you're saying, you went out there and coached to get your game better. Do you think that's missing in this day and age where kids are just handed everything that they get?
100%. 100%. We need to empower them to do that, though. You know, we can't just say, like, I was empowered to do that myself. It wasn't my parents saying, go and get a job. And I think we need to find clever ways with this next generation around really engaging them with regards to, you know, people first and something about the community and giving back and finding, like, kind of gamification ways to engage this next generation to be able to do that. And that's, you know, that's what I believe in.
Absolutely. Well, you've done this for 28 years, you're telling me. I got 20 off your website, thank you. So I did my research.
That's totally my fault. And lack of detail is not a strength. So even though I picked you up on that.
That's all good.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about now, you've been doing it for 28 years. What motivates you to continue doing what you do? Obviously, we get motivated to impact people. But it is a daily grind and slog. Mm. And like you said, you're busy every single minute of the day. You're going away in a week's time to go and present in America. Is that what motivates you? Is that those situations where you can travel and do those sort of things? Or is there something else?
Oh, look, it's definitely, you know, knowing who you are and what makes you tick and knowing the motivation cycle. And my motivation, one of my biggest motivations is adventure, variety, excitement, fun. In everything I do. So, of course, as you know, I ran a dating business, Doubles for Singles, a corporate business, Does Your Personality Match Your Game Style at one point. Then I'm experienced, you know, 8 years on the tour and then coach education for 10 years and now been a speaker for 6 years. So you got to constantly reinvent yourself, and that's what keeps it fresh, that's what inspires me to stay motivated in the coaching world. And of course, getting the call up, you know, from Nicole Pratt the other day to, you know, would I be interested in taking away the Junior Fed Cup team that had a number of different personalities?
Yep.
Was like totally like, yes, like, oh, where can I sign up for that challenge?
Yep.
So it's the challenge of, can I turn this around, or can I really impact these players that everyone maybe, you know, thinks that it's a little bit difficult, or which I used to think that way too. Like literally on the tour for 8 years, I was like, well, you know, I work really well with these two players, but these two, like, sorry, you know, like maybe give them to another coach. Until it wasn't until I understood more about emotional intelligence and neurolinguistic programming and actual how I change myself that I knew then how to bring out the best in everybody else.
That's amazing. Well, so, I love hearing stories like that. You talk about like constantly reinventing yourself. You talk about adventure. A lot of coaches out there that will listen to a podcast like this are out there coaching day in, day out, slogs, local clubs, whether you're a tennis coach or you're a footy coach in a local team, cold at nights, you know, how can they reinvent themselves when you've got one place that you've got to be? What's some things that you might have, tips that you might have for those people that are going, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I can't pick up and travel and go and do this. I can't go and out there and find that adventure. What kind of things do you have that they can take on board?
So, I mean, so my experience of being in the trenches was 8 years down at Oak Park. So I've done the cold nights and I've done the slog, you know, six days a week. So I do get it. And I think that you have to, first of all, A, understand yourself. And then once you understand yourself, then you can tap into the things that you connect with. So one of the things for me was having a great team. So I would prefer, rather than just me be down there at night slogging the hours, if I had, you know, Lauren Withers to the left of me and Norm Gertz to the right of me. I think there's a song in that, isn't there? Clown to the left. No, just kidding, Lauren. Literally, you know, it was part of what made, you know, what was a great team spirit. And of course, you know, whenever there was a little bit of rain, we went down to the pub and we actually called three or four local coaches who would meet us there. And it was it was an actual session on, we would talk coaching.
Yeah.
And even though it was raining, we were living and breathing the coach. I mean, one day that, you know, Melbourne skies did clear up and we had to go back out, but I mean, look, I'll pretend I didn't say that, but no, it's a true story. But so literally teamwork is really important.
Yep.
It's rewarding yourself with the little things. You know, we used to do a lot of like really cool lunches and things down at the club that you can do. And, you know, my philosophy, like being a Melbourne girl, yes, I do now chase the sun by choice, by design, by lifestyle design, but you know, a warm coach is a happy coach. You've got to find a way to keep yourself warm. And the other thing I will say on this, Mark, that I'm really passionately believe in is coaches self-sabotage too much. Like, say, like, so they're cold and they're a little bit, you know, they've done 8 hours, so they're just at the net volleying back and just hit it to me back at the net. Please don't self-sabotage. Like, get a hitting partner.
Yeah.
And wear 50 million layers and put yourself up the same end as the player.
Yeah.
I mean, it
changes.
So many people want extra hitting time. Well, put a young junior down there so you can get the most out of what's going to be most beneficial for that player. Even if you pay the hitting partner $10 an hour or whatever it is, it's money well spent, because you'll actually enjoy it more rather than your wrist, you know, feeling like you've got no ligaments left and you just find a way. Like, think outside the box. You know, do you really need to be on court at 10 o'clock at night? If that makes you that grumpy, then stop your night at 7 and look at how you can rechange your day. Like Gigi Fernandez was obviously, as you know, I have the coaching podcast, and she was one of our guests, and she was talking about how coaching is brilliant because she gets to pick up her kids at 3:30. So America, they have a lot of daytime coaching, but she does morning juniors in the morning, and she does ladies until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and her day is done. So I don't think we need to look at it traditionally anymore. And maybe, you know, maybe everyone's telling me, that could be wrong. I could be wrong, but find another way.
Yeah. Great message. Find a way. Because I think we can get stuck just doing the same thing every single day of our life. It's Groundhog Day. There's no doubt. But you've got to find little things that keep you motivated, sharp. Keep you driven. You've got to keep sharp. You've got to keep learning.
One more thing on that is lesson planning.
Yeah,
and I know that when I was a young coach, it was the three-step, what am I doing today as I'd walk out onto the court? And, of course, that's another reason when you look at your watch, when you're not prepared.
Yeah,
so if you just have a lesson plan, a training block, and you know what you're doing for the next 3 weeks, and all your coaches know what they're doing, then it's the most empowering thing, especially for kids and for parents. Let the parents know what you're working on in advance. I'm huge, as you probably know, on future-based thinking and future-based coaching. So, you know, I think that is important to let the parents know. Like, okay, you know, parents, if you're going to work on anything, just work on defense for the next 3 weeks. If you're going to help me out here, here it is. Here's what we're focusing on. So get out there and work on defense. Don't work on the, you know, on the rotations within the serve, the twist, you know, somersault and the, you know, like, don't do that. Yeah. Leave that to me.
Yeah.
You just stay on defense for me for the next 3 weeks and we're good to go.
Can I throw one in?
Because
a good time I feel to ask this question, and we on our other program on the baseline, we were talking about Nick Kyrgios before and the fact that I believe he looks extremely bored with life. His attitude in the press conference, which you may have saw last week, at Rogers, and the fact that he's getting the same questions from reporters, doesn't want to answer them. A similar thing must apply to tennis players as well. If you feel that things just aren't going your way, you also need to reinvigorate yourself, and sometimes you do need to get out of the sport for 6 to 12 months and just feel whether you want to come back or not.
Mm. When I took 12 months out of the game, it catapulted me back into coaching.
Because you missed it that much?
I missed it that much, and everything I'd learned, I was like, this information needs to be transported to all the coaches out there, and I think the best thing Nick could do would be take a sabbatical, take a little break, take a step back. Once you get that holistic view, then you can come back on your terms. You know, we need to be a servant to the sport, not the other way around.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a huge little quote there I got from one of my mentors in martial arts. He really does believe that, and I do too. And I think that if we are truly a servant to the sport rather than letting this, you know, the other way around, then we can come back on our terms, because you're falling in love with the nature of the game. And when you fall in love with the nature of the game, that's, you know, that's when you enjoy the battle of competition, where the heat of the competition becomes,
spot on.
Yeah, like Junior Fed Cup, so Kuching, Malaysia. So I'm sitting on the change events. I used to sit on the change events and feel sick and go, like, please double fold. Australia really needs this point. And now I sit there and go, channel the energy, let's go.
Yeah.
Like, I'm ready. Like, and my girls are ready and we could do this. Yep. You know, it's that kind of stuff. And
love it.
You know.
Wow, it's passion.
It is.
She drives me here, Shebeck.
Yeah.
She's driving. I've got this coffee sitting next to me. I haven't had to drink it. It's bloody good. It's awesome. I want to talk a little bit now about your philosophy as a coach. And it's obviously, like you said when you walked in, it's evolved over time. And it will continue to evolve. And it will evolve today and tomorrow. And you'll change little things up as we go along and it manipulates. But what's your overriding philosophy on coaching at the moment?
That's a great question. And I do a little thing where I rewrite. It's called rewriting your story every 30 days.
Oh, nice.
Mm. And I often think this is maybe a cool, as I said, I never just come in and talk. I always love to give strategy. So maybe this is a strategy for your listeners might want to try. So if you actually write down everything that bothers you about the sport and actually start from a place of, well, you know, maybe it's like, I'm really upset with this parent. They're not really listening to me. And this student doesn't even want to be here. And I'm cold and it's winter. And so you write down all that. And then you rewrite that into, you know, I'm really excited about going to work today because I get to work with this player and this player. And this motivates me to change my opinion with this parent. And that'll help me to then find my source of motivation to want to be out on court tonight. Also, you know, something like that. There's a great book by Bob Litwin called, I think it's called Live the Best Story of Your Life or something similar.
Yep.
Anyway, so I really believe in that and rewriting your story every 30 days and then read it out loud to yourself. So, again, back on the evolution principle. But for me, today, where I'm at, is around obviously gender equity, so not just equality, but actually, I don't believe that, you know, everyone should just get a job just because they're male or female. It is about the empowering the workforce, the female workforce, and actually making sure that we're giving the right person the job. So I'm huge into that, and I'm huge into how can I grow the female workforce, how can I empower young girls. And so all my philosophies are embedded in that, which is three words, which is engage, develop, and empower. So everything that I do around gender equity is to do with those three words. And so I live and breathe by that, and that's what drives me to to do things. So now when I say yes to a conference, if it's going to empower female coaches, if it's going to help men better understand how to coach girls, if it's an opportunity to run a girl power camp, if it's an opportunity to, you know, like my TEDx talk on unleashing female potential,
yep.
if I've got that opportunity, then I'll do it.
Yep.
And if I don't, if it's not the right fit, so having a clear philosophy helps you then make your daily decisions on whether things are the right fit and how and when you should spend your time. So that's how my philosophy, very, you know, in summary, is.
It's easy.
It's
simple.
Mm.
If your philosophy isn't simple, then don't have one.
Yeah.
Seriously, because like you said, it keeps it clear, keeps you on the right path. You don't have to. You don't go out there and make up stuff.
Mm.
You know, as coaches, there's a lot of making up things too often, and there's not enough planning and not enough clear direction. And you've just given us a direction in engage, develop, and empower. Mm.
Yeah, and engage, I mean, like, really understand who's in front of you. Don't just say your player-centered approach to learning and then you tell the player what to do.
Yep.
If you really believe that, live it. And how do you engage a team? I'm big into that, as you know, values drive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then develop. Actually, we teach. We need to teach. And depending on who's in front of us, will depend on how we teach.
Yep.
And then empower language. You know, Mark, language is my passion. It's still, I think more coaches need to come with me on this. You know, the what we say, when we say it, how we say it, the tone of which we use. We have to still, you know, we've still got so many subconscious biases in our language that just comes out before we've said it, before we even realize we said it. And that's okay if you do, but just go, oh, take that back.
Yeah.
I'll take that back.
Yeah.
And then reframe it in a way that empowers the student to strengthen the private inner voice, develop character. We're in the character developing game,
spot
Mark.
On. Spot on.
So that's where we're at.
She's such a lady of wisdom. I love sitting here and listening to these things.
You know, I get wisdom from, like, after this, I'm going to have lunch with one of my mentors.
Yep.
I just spent time in Singapore, you know, with one of my mentors. I took 3 pages of notes on a 1-hour session.
Wow.
Like, this is where wisdom
absolutely
is formed.
So your advice to coaches right now, have some strong mentors, have some good people behind you, around you, and have someone that you can lean on and discuss things with. And mentors don't teach you everything, but when you talk to them and you're the one speaking and you're the one listening to your own voice coming back and they're asking you questions, that's where we get our answers from.
And don't try to be them.
Yeah.
Don't try to be them. Just take it onto your coaching toolkit and then you try it in your way.
Spot on.
And then see what works.
And don't be afraid to ask someone to be your coaching mentor.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people think, oh, no, I can't ask them. You know, they're going to be too busy. They're too good. They're not going to be. Just go ahead and ask. So many people who become mentors want to be, but they just need to be asked.
Yeah.
The way to do that, too, in my philosophy, which is, you know, which is what I did, is literally back in I'm trying to remember what year it was, 1998, I rang all the academies in Florida. I couldn't get a job. No one would give me a job. And so I just rocked up anyway and said, I'm that crazy woman that rang you at 4 o'clock every single day for the last 6 weeks. Sorry, once a week because it was expensive. Not every day, I beg your pardon. Once a week for 6 weeks. And, you know, Howard Moore from Saddlebrook goes, oh, my God, is you Emma Doyle? Okay, okay. And I said, just give me free food and accommodation for a week. And if after a week you think I'm no good, then get rid of me.
Yeah.
I mean, but if you ask somebody to buy a coffee for them at their convenience for no more than 15 minutes of their time, I don't know anyone that would say no to that.
Yeah.
So that's my best tip out there for people.
Oh, it's great.
You know.
It's actually good. It's funny because you are a mentor to so many people out there that I've spoken to, and you probably don't even know it yourself. So it's funny because they watch what we do. They watch our actions. Josh Plant had such great words to say when he was sitting in front of me and said, you're one of my mentors. And I sat back and was like taken aback because we've only spoken twice or three times. He said, but I just watch everything you do. And I was like, wow. You know, so we're a mentor to everybody, but we also need our own mentors as well, no matter who we are and where we are in life. So
yeah, never stop growing, never stop improving.
It's so important. Emma, I want to ask you a question. How the hell did you get on a TEDx talk? That is amazing. Amazing. Like, when I saw you do that, I was like, wow, like, from the local St. Peter's Tennis Club to a TEDx talk, where did that come from? How did that come about? And, you know, obviously preparing for that, how was that whole experience?
It actually feels like another 45-minute discussion on the process. Honestly, it was a – but I'll give you the super short summarized version in that it was 6 months preparation. It was a number of rejections at the start. Wow. It was being endorsed by Judy Murray. of course, which came off the back of a Facebook post, you know, a couple of years ago.
Well,
to run my Girl Power camps in Scotland, and then I've started working with her, so she endorsed it, and then from there I employed a TEDx coach. The head guy in Melbourne here, I asked him to help me, you know, for one afternoon. So I invested in coaching myself.
Wow.
And then I did 33 drafts, and it was the first talk that I'd ever learned off by heart since I did, you know, I crashed and burned in 2001 or two at the Australian Open Grand Slam Contest. I did Marketing Small Business. I learnt the talk off by heart. It's the worst talk I've ever given.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden the advice I'm getting was, you've got to learn this talk off by heart. So I had all this anxiety around last time I did that. It was like I had no personality, and so I still had to bring my style into it.
Wow.
And on the day I was the first speaker, I walk out and they forgot to close the doors. So I'm 20 seconds into the talk, and this guy in a bright orange cowboy hat, this is only onto New York, right, comes and sits in the front row. And in my head I'm going, what are you serious, right? And in that split second, my whole talk left me. My whole talk, it looks like I'm pausing for effect, right? And if I hadn't have practiced it, the amount that I had, and then all of a sudden I took a breath and it all came back to me. But before I did it, I did anchoring, I did breathe in confidence, breathe out doubt. I was doing 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, and I nailed it. Well,
yeah, you did.
Minus two, you know, like for me, there's like three tiny unforced errors, but I'm not even going to mention them because hopefully
don't look for them.
Yeah, don't look for them, but just get the essence of the message.
Yeah.
Which of course is engage and empower. See, there's my philosophy even within the talk, right?
Yeah.
So that really comes out strong, and only because at the time I couldn't fit in develop as well. I tried, but I didn't want to give, you know, you can only give so much. So it was an incredible experience, and it was a huge, you know, massive chunk of my life. And someone said to me last week, would you do one again? And the instant resolve, wow. Yeah. And then I was like, I actually have a really good idea. And now I think I could halve the time. It's like anything, isn't it? Because you do the work, you do the preparation. Yeah, the first time you do it, it might take you X to get ready. But then you can now halve that time, and then you can halve it again. And,
yeah,
and that's what great speakers do. And that's what I'm doing at the WTCA conference. So I'm running Presentation Blueprint, which is all about developing your coaching presence and presentation skills. And so I think I felt there was a real need there for people wanting to learn how to just have better court presence.
Yeah.
And if you want to do a talk, which, of course, even talking to parents, you every time you do a lesson, you know, even at Oak Park taught me that, I'm actually delivering to the parents often.
Spot on.
So I'm really excited about rolling out this. It's only a 3-hour workshop, but hopefully it'll become an online course as well. It's got 9 modules, and so it's pretty cool. It's around relationships, courage, and preparation are the 3 core components of the course.
Well, look out for Emma Doyle. She is flying. I want to ask you a question based on what you said before about your conference that you spoke at in 2001, mm-hmm, where you crashed and burned.
Mm-hmm.
Because my next question was based on what mistakes have you made along the way that have helped you become the coach that you are? Because out there, coaches are listening going, yeah, but, you're doing this, you're already doing that. But you don't start in a position like you're in now. Mm. We come from somewhere.
Mm. Yeah. No, I'm an overnight success. Didn't you know that?
Well, we all are. Everybody is. Everybody is. I think it's important that coaches out there go, well, this is not just happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody goes through this, and it's not just something that's crashing on top of me, and I've got a weight on my shoulders. So what are some mistakes that you've made along the way?
I've made plenty.
Yeah.
Plenty of mistakes.
What kind of things do you think out there that coaches are making that they can probably relate to?
Well, I think, especially as a beginning coach, I think, you know, a beginning coach like sets up an activity and runs an activity, whereas an experienced coach lives an activity. So how do you get from setting up an activity to living an activity is through trial and error. And, you know, there's not one mistake that even pops into my head because there's been so many. And, you know, on the coaching toolkit that you have, it's like which tool do you pull out when? And, you know, back in my early coaching days, I certainly pulled out tools that, again, you know, we talk a lot, as you know, in a lot of our courses about cause and effect, that we're just fixing effect.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, if you think about it like an onion, right? So everyone's got three core, what I call superpowers, in their little onion, right? So you for me, everything's about stretch your comfort zone. Stretch your comfort zone. Don't, if you're in your little onion and you jump out of your comfort zone, often you'll make a lot of mistakes, mm-hmm. Whereas if you just stretch and you just look at who's doing what I want to do and they're a little bit better than me, and go and watch them and just say, learn the look. Do I see what they see? What are they seeing? And how does that, okay, did I see that? Or why did he say that? Or why did she say that in that moment? And then just add that into your coaching toolkit and then you try it.
Yep.
If it's applicable to your student.
Yep.
And then that's probably a good maybe tip on how to I don't think I addressed failures there, but on how to how do you become into living an experience.
Yeah.
And maybe if I can share like when I used to take the say Junior Fed Cups and World Teams, as I said before, I probably was too into riding every point. And now I ride every point, but I can look at it more like a bird, like a bird's eye of what's happening on the court.
Yeah.
Whereas I think also when I was a young coach, I wanted to be too chum-chum, like mates with everyone that I was coaching.
Yeah.
And so when you're trying to be someone's friend and mateship, then you when you have to deliver a hard message, it's difficult.
Yeah.
So I think that might be one thing that I didn't do very well, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And now taking this team, we were seeded six, not even meant to finish top four. We end up saving a match point two to super tie breaks, and we win the event, and now we're off to Budapest in the final in September. So forget about the result. The result is secondary to the goal that I set out for those girls. For example, I said, I want you to become better people this week. That is my number one goal. Number two, I want to qualify.
Yeah.
And number three, I want to win.
Yeah.
Right. Because, of course, results is important. Oh. So now when we go to Budapest, it's exactly the same message.
You know what I like about what you just spoke about? We had your very good friend on this show, Chris Anstey.
Oh, cool.
Chris came on and we discussed about tips for coaches that are out there, young coaches. And he said, go and shadow the best coaches out there.
Hmm.
If you want to learn how to do it, go and see what they do.
Mm.
Go and live what they do. Go
learn
and be around. Yeah. And I think you've just obviously reinforced that message to a lot of coaches out there that hopefully have listened to the show a few times. Mm. But go out there and see what the best coaches are doing. And that's the blueprint for success right there. I mean, you can put your own flavor to it and put your own personality on it and sprinkle it with whatever you want to sprinkle on top. But at the end of the day, those people are successful for a few reasons. And you can go and find that by living with them, basically.
Mm. And certainly, that's what I did at 23. So to do that at 23, I think I was away a year and a half. So, I think that's really important that's what we do.
Emma, this has been awesome. I want to go to our Fast Player of the Week. And I always mention this on the show, where we give credit to one of our coaches, our first coach we ever had on here, Tyron Baker, coach of the Western Jets Footy Club. We didn't have a name for this segment, but we call it the Fast Player of the Week, and he used it from a footy term. But let's go through some questions, pretty quick, short, sharp answers. You can elaborate a little bit.
Oh.
You can elaborate. I know you can elaborate. It's fine. We allow you to elaborate.
I'm an elaborator.
That's okay. We had a few on here that have gone for a long period of time, so we try and...
This is stretching my comfort zone.
I'm trying to stretch you here a little bit.
I like that.
All right, so let's talk about... What is the most important characteristic you feel is needed to become a successful athlete?
Confidence. Confidence equals time plus experience.
Confidence.
Go. Next one. Come on.
Time plus experience.
Did you want me to elaborate?
I like that. Number two is then, what is the most important characteristic for a successful coach?
Active listening.
It's a great point. We have not had that one on here.
We sort of had a listen to your players, listen to your...
Yeah, but hear. My thing is maybe active listening is hear what the player is thinking, feeling, seeing. It's not just listen.
Yeah.
It's hear.
No, we haven't had that.
Spot on. Emma, what is your favourite resource that coaches out there listening to this podcast can obtain to learn from?
TEDx talks.
TEDx.
Especially one in particular.
Yeah, Emma Doyle. Emma Doyle.
Unleashing Female Potential.
There it is. Type it in. Can you recommend to our audience someone to follow on social media for them to learn from? You can tell yourself. It's okay.
I would never say that as an answer. No, I'd say Judy Murray. She's let the activity do the teaching for you. She's a huge mentor of mine and
awesome.
Love what she's about.
Emma, who has been the greatest influence on you as a person?
My dad.
There is no doubt family plays a massive role in what we do.
Mm.
Emma, who has had the greatest influence on you as a coach?
Damien Carmody Stevens. He's the National Singapore Kendo coach.
Right. How'd you meet him?
He was a mature age student at Deakin first year. He was enrolled also in sports coaching and admin through David Parkin.
Wow.
Mm. Incredible coach. And I'm trying to encourage him to get on social media. So if he does...
Get onto that.
Get onto him. Get onto that one as well.
Emma, what's the most valuable lesson you've learnt along your journey as a coach?
The power of the pause.
The power of the pause. I love the TEDx talk. I like that.
Sometimes you don't need to fill the space.
Yeah. No, I like that. It's... Great message. Fantastic message.
She's just some TV commentators that could take that under the
in many sports.
Yeah.
Emma, what has become more important to you and less important to you along your coaching journey?
More important is the quality of relationships.
Yep.
And of course, you know, as less important what people think of me, definitely. It's a big one, I think. Especially in our industry, it is, you know, very male-dominated, and sometimes I've struggled in that, you know, trying to say something or be in the cool group. But the quality of the people that I surround myself with and those that are also aligned with my philosophy and also challenge my boundaries.
Awesome. Emma, what is the best part of coaching for you?
Well, I mean, I love a challenge of getting a result when no one thinks you can and, you know, making the impossible possible. And obviously when the aha goes for the player and you see it, they might not even say it, but you know, you read their body language and there's something in their eye that just sparkles or,
yep.
You know, and then usually my definition of success is when I attend one of my students' weddings or even a recent funeral of their father and they get up and do a speech and you think this person, the quality of person they've become as a result of the impact that you had.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
It's a great moment. That's a nice light bulb moment for us too.
Mm.
It's an awesome moment. Emma, last question. What would your athletes say, or your peers, is your favourite coaching quote? What does Emma Doyle always say?
I quite often quote Dr. Seuss. We have brains in our head, you know, feet in our shoes. You can choose to steer your life in any direction you choose. But I quite often, in the coaching circles, I love to finish with this one and people often say, can you say that again and write that down? So they might say this, but...
I'm going to write this down.
Effective coaching is not what you say, but what they hear. Effective coaching is not what you show them, but what they see. Effective coaching is not what you do, it's what they do. And the value is in what they experience and take away so that they want to come back next week and get better. And that's one of my favourite little quotes about really understanding what coaching is. Because it doesn't matter how much I know, it's actually irrelevant unless they can then understand what that really means. But people call me, the most thing, if you said, people say about Emma Doyle, that is energy and passion. And then that then hopefully inspires them to want to keep learning and go with me. That's probably the two things that I always get.
Well, I tried to write down that quote, but it was so long, and I'm going to go back and listen and write it down because that's an amazing message, and I totally agree with everything that came from that message. And you're right, everybody that talks about Emma Doyle talks about the passion, the energy, when someone says, oh, do you know Emma Doyle? I go, do I know Emma Doyle? Do I know Emma Doyle? The energy and passion that oozes out of you and what you give onto your players and the way that you inspire, impact, and I can't remember the other one, inspire, impact.
Improve.
And improve your athletes, coaches, and the people around you. You do it so easily. From looking from the outside in, you do it amazingly easily. And I know it's not, but definitely looks like it from the outside.
Now, before you do your wrap-up, can I have one final question? Because it's only just occurred to me that I think this is important to hear from Emma and her thoughts on this one. AFLW, women's AFL, women's football, has become so big in the last 2 or 3 years. Unfortunately, though, the coaching resources behind women's football probably haven't been thought of as being a massive priority before women's football exploded. So we've got a whole lot of guy coaches, men coaches, who have been junior male coaches for such a long period of time, now in charge of 18, 20, 25, 30 girls. It's such a difference between coaching girls who are brand new to a sport and coaching boys who have been playing since they were 4 or 5 years old. Are you concerned that this is an area that the AFL really need to explore and fix up before it goes any further?
Oh, I'm not concerned. I'm excited.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I'm really excited because that's what I do. And to be honest, like, I can kind of kick an AFL ball better than I play tennis. So from a kid, I mean, I was not allowed to play, though. I had to play netball instead. So for me, there's, as Mark's, I've spoken to you about this, there's something in my heart there for AFL. I went to a game yesterday at the G, and, you know, I love it, and I am so excited about it. I mean, the LTA in the UK paid for me to travel around the country on teaching men how to coach girls in tennis. So I'm excited about helping them develop resources, whether it be me or somebody else. I've certainly put my name forward. I've had a number of meetings to say, this is what I can do, I would love to do, I want to impact, because we have to address this. And I address it in a way that's called subtle gender differences. Because, of course, there are some girls that are more like little boys and some boys that are more like little girls. But in the 60% in the middle, here are some tips on how we dress up competition, how we make it team-based, how we make it more social, how we make it more collaborative, yet still competitive. And this is what I'm really, really, again, as that word passion comes out in my voice, I hope you can feel it.
I can
AFLW,
feel it.
I'm here, I'm around to help. I want to help build resources if there's an opportunity there. This is something that needs to be done. It needs to be done as soon as possible. And I have gone out to a number of clubs already in the junior footy lands. And I'm starting to impact. So even if it's just clubs at the moment outsourcing, you know, someone like me, I'm not saying it has to be me. I'm saying just somebody who does what I do, who understands and who's an expert in especially like the teenage years, early teenage years is the space that I love to play and I love to impact. And we, you know, and again, my resources are, guess what they're based on, everybody? Engage, develop, empower. How do we help these coaches who've been... Again, that subconscious bias, they can't help it. You know, man up. Well, play one-on-one. We don't need to say man up. There's just one of many. I've got a whole thesaurus of words how we can change our language to empower young girls to be athletic and feel athletic and play the sport and fall in love with the sport the way I fell in love with the sport with no older brothers and my dad who really didn't want to kick that much with me. So.
Yeah. Tonight, actually, mind you, that's a good question. I didn't even know that was coming, Chebec.
No, neither did I. It just occurred to me that it was something that probably needed to be asked.
Yeah, so basically they've put a group of mentors together for female coaches coming through the AFLW system. I'm lucky enough to be one of them, and I'll be there tonight to hopefully impact about eight to ten female coaches that are coming through. I think it's important that female coaches get involved in AFLW. I think it's a really important part of coaching, but I'm definitely going to bring your name up when I'm there. So, you know,
I emailed the lady last week.
Lauren?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So let's get you on board.
You can mention you would have got an email last week from Emma.
Yeah. Did you feel the passion in the email?
And she's going to send you one every day for the next 6 weeks.
she'll knock on your door.
At 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Emma, if you want to be successful, that's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do. You got to knock the door down. Emma, it's been an absolute pleasure. I just want to go through some of the things I've written down because I've written 2 pages of notes here and you've given so many words of wisdom, and I'll go through it. Emma, you aim to inspire, improve, and impact. You get inspiration from others. You're a constant learner. You always make sure that you empower your athletes. You put people first. You're an adventure person, so adventure gives you the motivation to continue what you do. You constantly reinvent yourself. You want coaches out there to understand yourself better and have a great team around you to make sure you build culture within what you do. You're really big on preparation and making sure you're prepared. Lesson plans are really important to give direction in what you do because you have future. You're a future-based thinking coach, and you like to be a future-based coach. You think that it's important to step back sometimes and look from the outside in and making sure that you take a deep breath and understand why you're really doing what you do. You like to sit there and turn negatives into positives. You engage, develop, and empower. You say that values drive behavior. And when you did your TEDx talk, you talked about you invested so much time into yourself and you did 33 drafts of what you're about to do. You said that confidence is one of the most important parts of being an elite athlete. And active listening is one of the most important things about being a successful coach. Emma Doyle, it has been a pleasure to have you here. And I just want to ask you one question. What's coming up next for you?
Really excited. Off to the States next week.
Yep.
So doing some filming with Championship Productions, Tennis Evolution, and also looking at some of my own online resources. I think that's a way of the future. Coaches want to be able to learn at the convenience of their own home. So I'm really developing that side of myself. And, yeah, WTCA, Women's Tennis Coaching Association Conference, Sarah Stone has done an amazing job in setting up that organisation. I'm a big ambassador and supporter of it. So I'm doing a presentation on team-building strategies. I'll be unveiling some of the stuff we did at Junior Fed Cup around the Incapable Raging Elephants, which stood for improvement, respect and fun. Running the presentation blueprint course. Yep. Then, of course, over to Zurich for the Festival of Doers. I'm doing a presentation there for a female-only conference for expats, and then joining the Junior Fed Cup team. So we're doing a training week in Italy, and then go Aussie girls,
that's
Budapest.
Bring it on.
The final, I'm telling you, we've got a pretty amazing group of girls, and I'm really excited to lead them and then come home for 2 days and then go to the Northern Lights for my birthday in Norway.
I had to throw that one in because
that's what keeps us going.
There is never a dull moment in Emma Doyle's life. Check on social media. She's all over it. Outstanding coach person and someone that you can really learn from if you're out there and you're a coach. Thanks for listening. Emma Doyle, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good on you guys. Thank you for that. Another episode of Coach's Corner wrapped up. Thank you for joining us here on mypodcasthouse.com. And don't forget to check out a few more of our other podcasts, including On the Grid, our motor racing podcast, On the Baseline, our tennis podcast, and you might even want to tune into Food Bites as well and learn a bit about the food fetishes of some of our celebrities around town. All that on mypodcasthouse.com. We'll catch you again next time.